How's it going, hockey fans? This is episode 91 of the ClapperCast. This is our first playoff edition of the season. And I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, it's playoff time. I'm pumped. How are you doing?
You know, I'm struggling right now. I'm wrestling with what exactly do we call this episode, because it's not really a preview because, you know, pretty much
we
every series
is
underway. Yeah, it's not a review because they're still happening, so it's just like a playoff view.
Yeah, we're recording this on the 18th of May, and there's been, you know, obviously a few games so far. The Canadian teams haven't started yet, so at least we can get a quick preview in on those ones. But, yeah, I mean, we could still walk through. We had a prediction that, you wrote a blog post on our website, clappercast.com, and put our predictions in there. So we did get them in before the playoffs started. We didn't get to have an episode before then, but at least, you know, we have it in there what we thought would happen. So for posterity's sake, it is recorded before the start of playoffs.
Yeah, we've got these predictions in. We're not just being sleazy and changing them two games in once the team we picked is going down 2-0.
Yeah. So let's just take a, you know, kind of a walkthrough about why we kind of gave our predictions, and we'll kind of talk about the storyline so far early on here in some of these for the series that are underway. So let's start out west, the Colorado Avalanche versus the St. Louis Blues. Colorado Avalanche were the President's Trophy winners with the best record in the NHL. Most points,
they won it,
I guess.
On a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
They didn't even have the most points, technically. They won it on a tiebreaker.
So
first time, I think, since 06, 07 with the Sabres and Red Wings, I believe.
So definitely a great season. I think they were kind of expected to be good, and it was just kind of, you know, between them and Vegas, really, who's going to win that division and get it. What's your prediction for this series?
Despite what Ryan O'Reilly thinks, the Avalanche are taking this pretty easily, in my opinion. I've got the Avalanche in five. St. Louis was extremely average the entire regular season. They managed a negative goal differential. You know, Jordan Binnington, the goaltending situation in St. Louis, we kind of thought they might struggle a bit. They didn't do great. And Binnington last year's playoffs was a massive letdown with his .851 save percentage, .472 goals against average. So, you know, I think game one, what did Colorado win, 5-2?
I think it was 4-1.
4-1.
So close. You're being generous.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Colorado kind of, They just have more finish, I think, than St. Louis, and it's going to be a lot easier for Colorado to take it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I went with Avs in six for my prediction. I think that just the, you know, the veteran presence of the Blues, they've been a team that have won, that they might get a couple games here, but the power that the Avalanche have up front, and they've been really good defensively this season too. Like, let's not take that away from them, but they've actually been, I think they're one of the top teams in the league for goals against, as far as, you know, the lowest in the league, and they've had a lot of injuries. You know, Eric Johnson hasn't played at all. He's a, you know, a top six D man, top four D man for them. But they've had really good goaltending. You know, they brought in the worst goalie in the league, Jonas Johansson, and he's looked good. And Grubauer, you know, big fan of him, and Burakovsky's getting hot at the right time, and you know, they just look like that they're ready to go for a pretty deep run. And so I think that, yeah, the Avalanche are going to come out on top. And in game one, you know, they came out ready to play and showed that, you know, they've got the scoring power. And McKinnon, I think, had a few points, and Landeskog had a Gordie Howe hat trick.
Yeah, so that's a great sign early on that your best players and your leaders are that engaged and creating that much energy.
Yeah, and they really look like they came to play and they came to win. And I think you're right that you know, Ryan O'Reilly might be a little disappointed at the end of this one, but you know, maybe there'll be a photo of him in the locker room not taking his gear off like there was when he played in Colorado. So maybe there's that. And yeah, it's just kind of a weird note that the St. Louis Blues, I think they're one of two teams that only use two goalies all year. I can't remember who the other one is, but yeah, I mean, like, Binnington hasn't been as, you know, crazy as his rookie season, but Yeah, I got to go.
He's crazy in a different way because he's trying to start fights with everybody already.
Yeah, and that's in game one. He skated all the way down the ice because there's a bit of fireworks at the end of the game there, and it was in the Colorado end. And Grubauer was pushing someone out of his crease, and Binnington skated down. And the ref got in the way and kind of. It just seems with him, it's always that like, hold me back, bro. Like, hold me back. Let me at him. You know, that sort of thing where it's like he never actually does anything. He's always just like trying to be tough. And it's like, all right, I guess that fires people up. But like it looks really dumb in my opinion.
You know, at least he's trying. At least he's trying to get the energy, like get some momentum swing, like something going. But it's kind of one of those like all bark, no bite type situations, I think. Until something actually happens.
I think he's probably lucky that Dubnyk wasn't in net because I think Dubnyk would have just went right for him. But I don't think Grubauer's the fighting type. We're both kind of in agreement. A little difference in the number and amount of time that it'll take the Avalanche to win it all there in that series. But got to go with the Avalanche. They're kind of the favorite for the cup in my mind. So next up, you know, Vegas. They are up against the Minnesota Wild. And this is an interesting one. I actually went with the Wild in 7 on this one because I've just been a fan of, the Minnesota Kaprizovs all season. And, in the last few games where they played Vegas, they ended up coming back and winning. And, Minnesota kind of had that, kind of that playoff mindset almost, you know, kind of all season where, they just came back. They weren't ever out of a game. And, in game one, they ended up winning 1-0, and it was a real goaltender duel. Cam Talbot was amazing, and Fleury made some unreal saves. Shout out to Fleury for playing in his 15th consecutive playoffs. I think that's the first time any goalie has ever done that, so that's amazing for him. I just think that I had to go with one kind of major upset, and this was it. And I really hope the Wild can do it because I also, just my bias is I hate Vegas. So I would like to see the super teams that, have the salary cap issues. I would like to see them lose.
So you're telling me the team that can only dress like 15 skaters in a game is having salary cap issues?
Yes. Yeah, although I will say that Vegas is not as egregious as another team that we'll talk about in a minute. But so that's not where my like dislike of Vegas is. It's just the fact that they're so good. So what did you say for this one?
I just see Vegas. They just have the stronger, more experienced, and better roster. I mean, tied with Colorado for the most points in the regular season. Goal differential +67 in the regular season. It's just. They have so much strong team that I find it hard to see Minnesota being able to take them down. However, the interesting note and the thing that, kind of supports your foresight of potentially seeing an upset in this one, Vegas had a 3-4-1 record against Minnesota in the regular season. And despite the team's overall +67 goal differential, against Minnesota that was down to +1, like a 24-23 goals for or goals against for Vegas in the season series against Minnesota, which is kind of an interesting one because it's such a stark contrast to their performance against the rest of the division in the regular season. Now they also got to feast on San Jose, Anaheim, and Los Angeles, but for that type of record, it's showing that it's going to be a lot closer than maybe I think it'll be. And that first game, a 1-0 overtime game. Like that is, that's going to tell us like, yeah, how close is the series going to be? Are we going to go, one goal games all the way down to game 7, that type of thing.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Just how Vegas struggled against the Canucks, that series went to 7, I think last year in the bubble. And, they got up against a hot goalie and couldn't really solve them, even though they have so much firepower. They have so many weapons on that team. And so, I really think that Minnesota has a real shot at upsetting them because Vancouver got close. And, Vancouver, I think, was probably a worse team than Minnesota is right now. I mean, I don't know. They're probably actually pretty comparable. But, I don't know. This is just a hopeful prediction on my end. But yeah, I mean, the game one kind of spoke. It's going to be close. It's going to be close for sure.
One other quick thing of note is that we know over the last few seasons, Minnesota's been, you know, more or less let down by their goaltending in Devan Dubnyk basically just underperforming despite the team being one of the best defensive teams in the league. They just didn't have the goaltending to really make them shine. So this year they've got, I mean, Cam Talbot's been good and Kaapo Kekkonen has been good as well in net. And that could be, you know, are we seeing what the Minnesota Wild roster is supposed to be? You know, what kind of a top tier potential contender, or are they just overperforming? But either way, you know, they're kind of playing more in line with where their stats and where their, you know, play style and underlying numbers might indicate.
Yeah, the last few games of the season, I think they played against the Blues to wrap up their season, Minnesota, and they really didn't look very great, and they lost, I think, back-to-back against the Blues. But, you know, in that game one, they were competing. It was, they had lots of shots. They were in that game and, you know, got some net presence and ended up getting kind of a, you know, just capitalizing on a mistake to try and clear the puck, and then, you know, got a lucky bounce off of Martinez's skate and that went in. So, you know, I think that's always the key to beating a good goalie, is to just get traffic in front. It's not rocket science. It doesn't take, you know, a huge amount of, you know, individual skill to do that. And so, you know, teams can really capitalize on that if they're able to. Wild at seven for me.
But the thing with that, too, is both of these teams are very, very stingy, and neither of them give up many scoring chances. I think they're both, like, bottom five, bottom ten in the league in scoring chances given up. Or should I say top in terms of least amount. So all it's going to take, you know, you just have to keep pressuring, and you're going to have to find a way to generate those lucky bounces, those random chances, because you might not be able to get very many high-quality ones.
Yeah. So we'll move on to the Central Division. I forget what the sponsor is. It's like Honda or whatever, Discovery or Mass Mutual or I don't know, whatever one it is, the Central. So the Carolina Hurricanes versus the Nashville Predators. What was your prediction for this series?
Hurricanes in four. This is my sweet prediction, my main one. I don't really know how Nashville made it into the playoffs. It's kind of a...
Because Dallas didn't.
Yeah. They squeaked in because a whole bunch of teams were kind of middling to average throughout the regular season. Nashville had a hot streak at the right time and got them a couple extra points. I think the Predators, I'm just looking, they were like one of the worst. They were tied for the least amount of points in the regular season for a playoff team or something.
Yeah, and they also think they had like their leading scorer, I think, was Josi, and had like 30 points or something, and it was the league lowest for a team leader on a team. And there is, I think, seven skaters on Carolina that have that or higher point totals.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, you know, you're kind of mismatched here, unless you have Saros has a god tier series.
That's going to be it. I mean, the Predators were a team that everyone was like, oh, they're going to be selling off at the deadline to rebuild. Then Saros turns his game around and it kind of, you know, energizes the team enough to get them on a couple of decent streaks to get them into a playoff spot. You know, that's basically it, is they're going to be relying on UC Saros to be absolutely unreal and somehow manage to beat the two unreal goalies that Carolina's icing this year with Mrazek and Nedeljkovic, who have like just absurd numbers with like a two goals against average, 925, 930 save percentages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also went with a Hurricane sweep in this one. And, you know, not to take anything away from the Nashville Predators because they fought and got into the playoffs, but I really think that they really got in because Dallas didn't. And Dallas had like 14 overtime and shootout losses, and they lost a bunch in overtime to Nashville, and so that really made the difference in who could make it. And Dallas, you know, they had the shitty start to the year, and yeah. Anyway, so not to like just say that they made it because the other team faltered, but like 14 overtime and shootout losses, like that is such a huge swing. And I just think it's such a huge mismatch here. And, you know, I went with Minnesota in the last series, and it is a bit of a mismatch. But in this one, it's like, no, Minnesota was a good team during this, the
Minnesota
regular
was one
season.
Of the, you know, they finished third in that division. They were still kind of, they were only a few points back, too. They were still higher, and they were way higher up in the standings than Nashville. Like, they could have been, like, second in a couple divisions, I think.
Yeah, it's just this one is just, like, that in the Central, it's just, like, those top three teams are really strong, and then Nashville, or whoever made that fourth spot, is just, you know, real, really big underdog. And, you know, you mentioned that the goaltenders for the Canes, they ended up starting Nedeljkovic in game one, which I thought was kind of interesting. And they ended up winning, like 5-2. You know, their scoring talent took over. They were able to kind of control the pace, and it was at home, and they actually had a full capacity arena, which we haven't seen yet until that point. And so that was
Did they go full, or did they just cram 12,000 people into the lower bowl?
I think it was full. I don't know. Either way, it was...
They had the most people that's been in an arena.
Yeah, either way, it was it was really cool to see, you know, kind of a packed or as packed as it could be arena. You know, regardless of the COVID situation, whatever, that was really cool. And so, you know, feeding off of that was probably a huge part of it, too. It looks like the Hurricanes are on their way to you know, do some damage, but, you know, they don't count the Predators out. You know, maybe they get some more goal scoring and stuff, but that's kind of been their struggles. They scored a lot more when Forsberg was out for a long time, and then when he was in the lineup and when he's back, they haven't been scoring as much, which is strange.
You mentioned earlier about Carolina controlling the pace so much in that first game, and that's the key to their game, is that Carolina just plays such a fast-paced, action, high-event game, that the only way Nashville is really going to have a chance is if they shut that down, like has happened against Carolina in the playoffs a couple of years in a row here. Nashville has got a very elite defense. I mean, it's led by Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. Like, these are all top-end defensemen, and even though, you know, Josi and Ellis have very strong offensive capabilities, they're going to have to band together and slow the game down so much to disrupt what the Hurricanes can do, and just don't let them play that game they need to, if they want to at least keep it close, because at that point it turns into the same thing that I was talking about with Vegas and Minnesota, where it's just few scoring chances. You just have to find a way to create a lucky bounce.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got some solid defense for sure, but they've also got a pairing of Gudbranson and Ben Harper. And so, like, they're monsters, but, like,
I
think
feel
the
like
speed
those
of Carolina.
Top three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those top three, or I mean, whoever plays the other spot on the second pairing, if it's Fabro, maybe.
I think, I don't know if he was in for game one, but I
can't remember.
You know,
but
they've also
those,
got, like,
you know,
Matt Benning as a sixth, seventh guy, and
I feel like those top three are going to be ending up playing 25 plus minute nights.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right. And I think they got Borowiecki, but I think he's on the IR right now too. So I'm not sure what his status is, but if he's able to come back, maybe his physical play makes a bit of a difference. I mean, the speed of Carolina is just, you know, I don't know if Predators are going to be able to, you know, defend against that. And we kind of saw that in game one. So, yeah, I mean, our predictions are the same on this one. The one sweep I predicted. So we'll see if that happens. You know, I'm not a big Hurricanes fan. So for me to, you know, go with them just shows that they're just such a strong team. And so next up in the Central, we've got probably the matchup of the first round that most people are excited for.
I have to agree with you there.
Florida Panthers versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it's surprising that this is the first time that this matchup has ever happened. It's exciting, though.
With the lack of times that Florida's ever made the playoffs, yeah. A little bit less surprising. But, yeah. I mean, they did have both of the teams in, you know, the early 2000s had a couple of decent years around the same time, I think. So it is in its own way surprising that they've never managed to match up like this in the playoffs, and it's been, you know, 25 years for them. So pretty big story. And like you said, matchup of the first round, that both of these teams are just so strong. So how are you feeling about this series?
Well, I mean, again, I feel like I'm just saying which teams I like and which teams I don't like, but I don't like Tampa. I've never liked Tampa. And I went with the Panthers in seven. And, you know, I think that the Panthers matched up extremely well against Tampa all season. And I just, you know, with the additions that they made at the, you know, throughout the season, I think that, you know, they have a really good shot at winning this first ever Battle of Florida. But that being said, you know, they gotta stay out of the box, because Tampa Bay has got Nikita Kucherov back and Steven Stamkos back. And this is what we were alluding to earlier with the, you know, the salary cap thing. It's just extremely suspect that Kucherov is, you know, had the quote unquote mental fortitude to be able to come back and will himself back into the game in time for game one of the playoffs.
Exactly, you know, when he's been, the salary cap doesn't matter.
Yeah, when he's been skating and practicing with the team for weeks and they just didn't have the salary cap to bring him back. So it's just like they totally circumvented the cap. And for that reason, it's just one more reason for me to not like Tampa Bay, and I want the Florida Panthers to win. And, you know, the Calgary Flames fans have been kind of shitting on Sam Bennett for a long time because of, you know, his play during the regular season. And he showed up big for them in playoffs last year, you know, that Lucic, Dubé, Bennett line. But I think Florida fans got a bit of, they kind of understand why Calgary fans have been, you know, upset with Sam Bennett, because he looks great for periods like he did at the end of the season for Florida. And then in game one, he is basically the reason that they lost that game, because he took three penalties, I think, and or two, maybe two. But on both of those power plays, Tampa Bay scored, because their power play is scary now with Kucherov on one side, Stamkos on the other, Hedman. You know, they've got a scary power play, and so you have to stay out of the box. And
to even more, Bennett got himself suspended for game two.
Yes. Yeah.
For boarding Blake Coleman, I think.
With a completely unnecessary hit. You know, just to totally agree with that one. It was a dirty hit. And I think Florida fans are kind of upset because, or at least online anyway, that, you know, there was a boarding call earlier in the game where McDonough boarded Duclair from behind. But, you know, he also didn't take, like, the entire width of the ice to skate at the guy and paste him into the board. So, you know, agree with that suspension. And, you know, it's just aggravating because Sam Bennett is an important part of that offense now. And he takes himself out of the game. And also, he took that penalty at the end of the game when it was a tie game, I think. And they went out and scored. And so it's like, man, it wasn't even a borderline play. Like, it's like, that's always going to be called. It's just stupid. Just a dumb, dumb, reckless play. And, you know, Quenneville's got to be just livid at that decision. Yeah.
Cause that's just, that's just, like, really poor decision-making, game management for Sam Bennett to be taking so many penalties, game one of the playoffs, getting yourself suspended on unnecessary hit. You know, he's such, like you said, he's such a key role player for that team. You know, like that with him, Duclair, and Verhaeghe being so versatile in that forward group to be able to jump up and down the lineup and play in wherever and contribute in so many different ways, you gotta be playing smart, and you cannot be giving a team with the firepower of Tampa Bay any extra chances to score. Yeah. It's just such a bad look.
Yeah, exactly. Game one was exciting as you know, all hell. It really is going to be, you know, the series of round one to pay attention to. So what did you go with for your prediction in this one?
I lean the Lightning in this. It's going to go seven games. It's going to be a long series, I think. But I can't see Florida being able to take out Tampa Bay and the depth that they have. And you know, the re-addition of Nikita Kucherov conveniently missing the entire regular season, coming back for the first day of the playoffs, you know, the NHL investigated and found no evidence of cap circumvention, but they didn't technically break any rules. I just find it interesting that the recovery time for the surgery is exactly the length of the regular season.
Yeah, and they
hinting that I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of delayed or scheduled a surgery to fit that timeline appropriately.
For me, it's you know, that probably has happened before for injuries and stuff, but just the fact that they used that amount of cap space to re-sign Braden Point, Mikhail Sergachev, guys that they probably would have lost, you know, and so it's just aggravating because it's like, you know, they're
playing $18 million over the cap in the playoffs. You know, they have an extra $18 million of roster on their team,
so they're essentially like, you know, having their cake and eating it too, because they were able to keep all these other guys, and then they get all these guys back for playoffs, and then, you know, if they end up going and winning another cup, and then they have to, you know, trade guys off or whatever, or do whatever, it's like, yeah, it was totally worth it, and, you know, whatever. But, you know, I really look forward to them getting knocked out and for them having to be in a real cap bind for next season, because it's just so frustrating.
It'll be interesting to see, because with the backlash and the outcry that's been, you know, that's been happening with the Tampa Bay Lightning situation, it'll be interesting to see how the NHL alters the rules on LTIR and cap space to see, you know, maybe they stop doing things like Tampa Bay trading for Gabrick and Anders Nilsson from Ottawa just to get the extra LTIR space to bring in more guys. Maybe they start applying the cap into the playoffs as well for certain situations, or, you know, have to play a certain amount of regular season games to be playoff eligible.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I just know that it feels wrong for this to be totally okay. Yeah. You know, like, it just seems like
it's sus.
Yeah, it's extremely just questionable, and you know, for a player of the caliber of Nikita Kucherov, you know, a guy who won, you know, the Art Ross, to just come in and we're just adding him to our team now conveniently for game one. We thought he'd be
most teams have their
and they were
most
like
teams have their black aces.
Yeah, we've got Kucherov.
Black aces, like random AHL guys coming up for a couple of games here and there, but now we got Kucherov.
Yeah, and they were like, just the audacity for the team to be like, oh, the mental toughness for him to come back. It's like, obviously they're not gonna like admit like, yeah, we did this to, you know, cheat basically. Yeah. But it's like, well, yeah, we originally thought he'd be ready for round two, but he's ready for round one. It's like, yeah, because you realize that round one was a tough matchup, and so you were able to get him in. But it's like, yeah, the playoff, there's no salary cap, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's just so annoying that they're able to just get away with that. But, you know, that's the salt just coming out. But yeah, I mean, we both kind of have the same length of time on this one, just kind of we go opposite directions, and I think I really leaned into the I don't like Tampa Bay and what they're doing, and I want them to get knocked out in the first round and have them issue another, you know, we know you don't want to hear it, but sort of email, like when they got eliminated by Columbus. And, you know, maybe Bobrovsky can, you know, have that magic happen again where he was part of that Columbus team that swept Tampa Bay. So maybe he's still got that kind of magic in him where he can, you know, beat a good team.
The man who single-handedly ends franchises.
Yeah. We'll move on, I guess, to the, you know, division formerly known as the Metro, where the division-leading Pittsburgh Penguins ended up matching up with the New York Islanders. So for this one, again, you know, I'm a Capitals fan. I don't like the Penguins, but I had to go with the Penguins in six. I just think that the Penguins really surprised a lot of people this season winning that division. They had a lot of injuries. You know, Malkin was out for a significant amount of time. He's still out. And they've just got so much depth, and they've had some great goaltending from Jari. You know, at times I thought that they looked like they were going to be in trouble with goaltending, but they ended up kind of turning it around, and just a lot of secondary scoring. And I just think that, you know, it's Crosby. It's Crosby, and he's going to be, you know, doing everything he can to win. And in game one, he had an absolutely gross one-handed tip. And so, yeah, Penguins are up one game to zero. They're currently winning in game two right now. And so
I think,
yeah, just had to give it to
the Islanders. Islanders won game one.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Palmieri in overtime. Yeah. My bad. Yeah.
Isles up 1-0. Penguins winning game two halfway into the second.
Yeah. My mistake. Yeah. Totally right. Went to overtime, so at least the Penguins got the point, right? So
yeah, exactly. That'll help them in the long run.
So yeah, it was a close game, obviously in overtime. Palmieri had two goals. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now. It's just so much going on. but I mean, regardless of losing game one, you know, I just can't count Crosby out, and I still think that they'll do it. So where did you line up on this one?
So despite the fact that I'm always one of the main people saying when Crosby and, you know, when he's healthy, Malkin are on the team, you can't count the Penguins out, I lean the Islanders in seven games in a long series. You know, the Penguins have such a strong offensive team. I think they were second in goals for in the regular season. They only won behind Colorado. You know, they've got Gensel, Rust, and McCann all with excellent performances. You know, Gensel 57 points. McCann was injured for a bit, but he had 32 points in 43 games. And even Kasperi Kapanen had 30 points in 40 games. That's a really strong showing from some of the depth scoring. And it's going to give them the versatility they need to, you know, continue to pile it on the Islanders, who are a very stingy team. They don't give up much, but they don't generate a lot either. You know, the 128 goals the Islanders had is second lowest in the league. But they were still really good, really strong, because Varlamov and Sorokin had excellent seasons in net, and the Islanders just play a very strong shutdown game. So I think over the length of the full series, that might squeak out a couple of extra games for the Islanders. But it's going to be close, and I would not be the least bit surprised to see the Penguins' offensive firepower just be able to, you know, generate that one extra goal per game that they need over the full series.
Yeah, it's just always so tough to go against the Penguins just because of Crosby. But yeah, I mean, the Islanders have beaten the Penguins before. I think it's two seasons ago. Penguins lost in the first round to Montreal last year. So, you know, it's definitely possible to knock them out. And so I would love to see them get knocked out. But I'm still going with Pittsburgh in six. And then I guess the last American matchup to talk about is the Washington Capitals versus the Boston Bruins. This series is currently at 1-1, two overtimes. And it was the opening matchup of the playoffs. And as everyone wanted to happen, Tom Wilson got the first goal of the playoffs. So great job for Wilson. My prediction as a Capitals fan was Bruins in seven, and my thought process for this is, you know, one, I think the Bruins are a better team going into playoffs than the Capitals, and two, I wanted to go against the Capitals so the Capitals win, because if I go with the Capitals, then it's, you know, I feel like I would have a big head, and I'm expecting them to win, and I don't want to be that, so I'm going against the team that I like so that they win. So it's not that I want them to lose. I just feel like if I go against them, they have a better chance of winning. So that's my reasoning for that. But like I said, I really do think that the Bruins are a better team coming into playoffs. The addition of Taylor Hall has been just great for them, and the addition of Mike Riley has been really, really positive for their blue line. And they've got some of their blue liners coming back. Like, they had Brandon Carlo back at the end of the season. He's been playing again. And so, you know, I think that they're just kind of getting hot at the right time, have a really good top six. The Capitals were without Kuznetsov coming into the season, or to the series. They were without Ilya Samsonov in net going into the series as well. And so, you know, it wasn't a great position for the team. There's obviously drama going on with the Tom Wilson thing right at the end of the season as well, so a lot of distractions for the team coming in, and you know, it's just kind of in a weak spot coming into that series, and so Boston was just kind of poised to, you know, take it, I guess. So where did you go on this one?
For a similar reason that I think the Bruins just have a bit of a stronger, deeper roster, I take the Bruins in six in this series. You alluded to one of the main issues with the Capitals roster right now with Kuznetsov and Samsonov out on the COVID list, but they are also dealing with major injuries. Ovechkin missed most of the last couple weeks of the season with a groin or hamstring injury or something. John Carlson missed time with an injury of his own. Nicklas Backstrom got rested to help recover with something. TJ Oshie was a question mark going into the series. He's back and he's contributing already, but all these guys are already hurt and going into the playoffs, and that's, you know, over the course of a deep playoff run or even just a longer series, it could end up with players being sore, tired, underperforming. And then, you know, in game one, Vitek Vanacek gets hurt. So I think, did Craig Anderson start in game two?
Yes.
Is he? Okay, so, you know, they're down to their third string goalie already. And the Bruins are rolling with Tuukka Rask and Jeremy Swayman, who's been a bit of a breakout as their backup goalie this season. So I just see the Bruins with the stronger roster, the healthier roster, being more likely to be able to take this one, to be able to wear the Capitals down. You know, one of the issues with the Bruins last season that kind of led to their downfall was a bit of a depth issue, that they couldn't really generate anything once Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak were a bit under, or weren't performing. You know, they got blown out by the Lightning in that series. They were losing by multiple, like, 3-4 goal games. So they've got now a second line where Taylor Hall, he had 14 points in 16 games on that second line with David Krejci and Craig Smith, who's been on fire the last couple weeks as well. And just to give them that extra line to match up against the Capitals offense, it's showing that it's working. I mean, the two close games into overtime already. And I think the Boston Bruins are just a bit stronger, a bit healthier, and probably a bit more poised to take the series.
Yeah, I mean, good news for the Caps is that Ovechkin, you know, came out all guns blazing in game one, just absolutely destroyed David Krejci with a hit. And so he's looked really good. He's looked fast. And, you know, all those guys are playing. Kuznetsov and Samsonov were taken off the COVID protocol list. And so, you know, I don't know if they're going to be coming back in. But, you know, Craig Anderson turns, I think, 40 soon. And he's, you know, had a lot of shots and he's looked pretty good, especially for a guy who's made, like, you know, two or three starts this season. And so, you know, but yeah, it's not a great place to be in to be using that third goalie. But, you know, Anderson is a guy who's played a lot of, I think he's like fourth of current goalies for, you know, playoff overtime wins or something like that. And so, anyway, yeah, he's played a lot
of
hockey.
To his advantage, yeah. So, you know, he's an experienced goalie. I mean, he was Ottawa's goalie in that surprise run to the conference final a few years back. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he's been able to rest and just kind of practice and not overwork himself during the regular season, you know, bodes well for an older goalie who needs to step in an important time here. So, you know, he was solid in games one and two. So that's hopefully a sign of things to come for him. But
yeah, and just a note on the Vanacek injury is that I think Kelly Hrudy had the absolute worst take all season, and it was really disrespectful to both Vanacek and Craig Anderson on the Sportsnet panel. It was just an absolute joke. He said that it was Vanacek's, or if he opened that segment saying, "I guess I'm supposed to feel sympathy for Vanacek because he's injured," and then he went on to blame Vanacek for not stretching properly and injuring himself, and pro athletes don't get injured like that. And it was just fucking ridiculous and made me really mad. And just like, yeah, I mean, Rudy literally burst a button off of his suit jacket from being too fat earlier in the season on a broadcast. So it's like, if you live in a glass house, don't throw rocks, bro. And you didn't, you know, you played in the 80s and 90s and, you know, guys didn't know what stretching even was then and had, like, you know, beers and smokes on in intermissions and stuff. So it's like, yeah, give me a break. Like, shut up. Like, and then, you know, Ovechkin had a muscle injury at the end of the season that you mentioned, you know, no comment on that. And groin pulls and hamstring injuries are the most common injuries in goalies. I mean, Tuukka Rask has been out for that, you know, same reason some parts of this season. And so it's like, you know, Carey Price, you know, if it's just a, it's not a, you know, superstar goalie, so you're just going to talk shit about him. And I was really disappointed that absolutely nobody on that panel said, that's a stupid take. How can you say that pro athletes don't pull muscles? Like, I just, it just enraged me. It was so stupid. Like, an absolute joke. Oh,
and,
my God.
And there's the salt segment of the episode.
Well, it's just, I mean, like, I don't know how you can ever play sports and, you know, agree with that. That, you know,
yeah,
things happen.
It's a rough
take. You push yourself, and it's just like, this is an absolute garbage
thing.
The
thing is, all it takes, it doesn't matter how much stretching you do, all it takes is one awkward movement where you put something at an angle, you know, a couple of degree angle that it isn't used to, and it's, you know, push off the wrong way, and you can pull your groin, you know? Especially for a goalie going back and forth across the crease, it could happen without even overextending.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, how hard is it to say that exact thing? And you, as a goalie, you'd figure that he would know that, yeah, sometimes you make a crazy, try and save something that beats you, and you know, you pull something, and you know, you don't have to be a dickhead about it and say that it's his fault for not stretching properly. It's like, you know, you think that, you honestly think that someone making their first ever playoff start in the NHL is going to not properly prepare for that?
Nah, like, he rolled out of bed, ate a junior chicken on the way to the rink, and hopped on the ice.
Yeah, it's like, that's laughable. Like, come on. Like, you know that the trainers aren't going to let that happen. They're going to be working with him to try and do everything they can to get him, you know, mentally and physically ready for the game. And, you know, they go out for a pregame warm-up, and, you know, they have a, you know, game day skate and everything like that. So it's like, it's just like, that was just such a, I couldn't believe it when he said that. I was like, are you for real? Like, oh my God.
It's the clickbait segment of trying to get people to watch the show.
Yeah. And it's just like, luckily, like, I went online, like, everyone was just kind of in agreement. I was like, this is a really bad take. And I cannot believe that Sportsnet employs people that think that way. And it just kind of reminded me of some of the other guys that they've had in the past, and, you know, just how stupid they are. And maybe they're, you know, instructed to do that, but it's just like, come on, man. It's a really bad look. So anyway, yeah, I mean, getting over that saltiness, it's not even about, you know, anything to do with the game. It's just, that was really stupid, and it makes me not, I actually haven't watched any of their intermission stuff since. I've just been, you know, flipping to other games or whatever, and it's like, I don't really care what Kelly Rudy thinks, you know, the guy who has a stupid rap song about when he played hockey. So yeah, weird. But you know, I really hope the Capitals can take a series, but Boston looks like they're poised to kind of go a little bit further for sure. And I guess we'll move into the North Division, and I'm saving one team for last here. The Toronto Maple Leafs, so division winners, they are matching up against the Montreal Canadiens, and that is what everyone wanted.
Yeah, first time since what, 1976 or something?
Oh, it's
been so long, and this is a historical matchup. You know, this one goes way back to the origins of the NHL, English Canada versus French Canada, Toronto versus Montreal. It's so historic and such a big deal to see these teams in the playoffs. It's going to be a fun series.
Yeah. You know, I think that the Florida-Tampa Bay series is probably going to be the series of the first round. But if it's not that, I think it's going to be this one. You know, just because it's, you know, just the amount of hatred the fandoms have for each other, and, you know, just there's so
much
history.
The amount of coverage it's going to get. It's going to be like Sportsnet, Roger, like, they're going to be pumping
airwaves
with constant, like, you know, rivalry fueling material.
It's everything they
one.
Dreamed of. They wanted this. They wanted this so bad.
It's a producer's wet dream.
Exactly. Yeah. So what was your prediction for this one?
Well, ultimately, the Maple Leafs have a much better roster. The Habs kind of squeaked in near the end of the season. They're kind of one of the worst teams that made the playoffs. So I lean Maple Leafs in five on this one.
And I'm in total agreement.
Yeah, I mean, the stars are kind of aligning for the Maple Leafs. You know, win the division. They don't have to face Boston right away. You know, Matthews, Rocket Richard winner with 41 goals. I don't know if he scored in the last game. You know, Marner with 66 points. You know, they're both top five in scoring. And the main criticism of the Leafs over the last handful of seasons has been, you know, they're all offense, no defense. But the Maple Leafs were about seventh best in goals against per game this season. So, you know, they're a top 10 team in that. And you know, for all the people who saying they don't defend, like, you've got evidence that they do this year. They have been this year. Their goaltending's been fine. Once they've finally kind of found someone to take over, they've kind of rotated through a few guys, and that's kind of the question mark, is kind of who's going to stay hot. Is it going to be Jack Campbell all the way through? Is it, you know, is Anderson even going to be the backup? Because that was a question too, if he was going to be in a battle with David Riddick for that backup spot. But you know, Jack Campbell took over the starter's role for the end of the season. Looks like he'll be the game one starter for the Leafs, and you know, Montreal kind of, you know, their best players are coming off of injury or they're already injured. Like, mm-hmm. Dano, Gallagher, Carey Price have been out with various injuries. They might have some of them back for that game. Shea Weber had a thumb splint on, so he's been playing injured for a bit here. So we've got a lot of question marks in terms of roster health, and that could really hamper their abilities to counter Toronto this series.
Yeah, but they have Corey Perry.
True.
So maybe
he'll just go and skate through Jake Allen's glove and then have it be a good goal anyways.
Yeah. I mean, Corey Perry was really great for the Stars in playoffs last year, and so, you know, maybe he can bring back that magic and, you know, provide some timely goals for the Habs. But yeah, I went with Maple Leafs in five again. I think that they're just so much better at every position. I mean, you can argue on goalie if Price is even coming back, you know, where the better goaltending advantage is. But, you know, he has been great at times this season. And so I don't even know if he's going to start. I mean, both him and Gallagher practiced and played the last game of the season for the AHL team. I don't know how that went for them or if that's happened yet. But, you know, they're trying to basically get back into game shape, and you know, to have your $10 million goalie or whatever it is he makes to not be kind of questionable for the start, that's not a great place to be in. You know, I don't know, but I just think that the Toronto Maple Leafs have made some really smart additions. You know, they've got Nick Foligno, who is just an absolute playoff grinder, battler, and I think that they're just going to be in a really good place in this series, and just their offense and their offensive ability is just going to be, I think, overpowering for the Toronto or for the Montreal Canadiens. And you know, one interesting storyline is kind of you have Josh Anderson and Nick Foligno, so you got the Columbus former teammates battling it out here. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I just think that Toronto's too strong. I would love to see it go seven though, because or at least six, because it came out today that the Montreal Canadiens have, I think, tentatively approved for 12% fans in the arena for Game 6 in the Bell Centre. So if that can happen, that would be awesome. Hopefully we're both wrong and we can actually see some spectators in a Canadian arena in the first round.
Yeah, it's only if that would be awesome. It's not very many people, but I mean, Habs fans are going to be loud.
Yeah, they'll make up for the empty seats.
It'll feel like there's 18,000 people there, probably.
Yeah. And last but not least here, I know it's probably the one that you're most excited for, Edmonton Oilers versus the Winnipeg Jets. So I'll let you have the last word on this one. I guess I'll be selfish and go first. I picked the Oilers in seven. And I mean, just thinking about it now, I think that might be too many games, but, I really think that the Oilers are gonna, you know, kind of go away with this one, but just by the fact that they're the Oilers, they might let a few games get by them. but I do think that they're gonna, you know, come away with it, whatever happens in this series. I just think that their power play is so good, and they've actually been getting some really great goaltending from Mike Smith, who I think really should win what's the award called? The
Masterton.
Masterton, yeah. I really think he should win that. You know, if all their top players perform, I think that they, you know, have a really good shot at winning, and I just think that they can blow by Winnipeg's defense. And they've, you know, throughout the season, they stacked up really good against Winnipeg. Winnipeg was up at or above 500 against every other team in the division but Edmonton. And Winnipeg also really sucked to end the season. And, you know, they're coming into playoffs really, really slow. So that's, you know, kind of sucks to come back from, but maybe the intensity of playoffs, you know, boots them back into gear here. But, you know, unless Connor Hellebuck has a absolutely outstanding series, I really think that it is the Edmonton's going to come out on top. So now that I pumped up the Edmonton's tires, where do you sit on that one?
Pretty much in the same boat. Like you mentioned, the key point is that Winnipeg basically was falling over themselves into the playoffs. They ended the season like 2-8-0 or something, and that was including a couple of games against Edmonton that they got stomped.
Shellacked.
McDavid, yeah. And, you know, Edmonton as a whole was good against Winnipeg overall, but McDavid and Draisaitl specifically, I think they had the most points against Winnipeg than any other team in the division this season. Like, just those, like, their production was more against Winnipeg than every other team in the division. So as long as they can keep that up, then, you know, they've got a guaranteed 3 goals from those two every single game. The tricky part for Edmonton is going to be depth, as always. Most of the team's impact and success goes through McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, McDavid, I think, had a point on 57.8% of Edmonton's goals this season. And that was like the highest number since, you know, the 90s or something around Jagr and Lemieux, I think. But luckily the season, you know, a few others, like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had a decent season. Darnell Nurse was solid offensively and defensively. Tyson Barry had a great offensive year. He's up in the point per game range. And, you know, they had goaltending from Mike Smith. So they were able to get contributions from other players, other lines. Like they had been rolling Tyler Ennis and Jujhar Khaira with Josh Archibald. They were an amazing third line for a little bit during the season, just generating so much pressure and chances that it's such an improvement over other years where it's just nothing happens when McDavid and Draisaitl aren't on the ice. So, you know, we've kind of seen Edmonton struggles with high-pressure games. They kind of have those stretches where just nothing works, and that, you know, we saw Chicago take them out in the play-in series last season. And that's kind of the concern going into this one, where Winnipeg doesn't have much of a shot, really. Their defense doesn't match up. The depth doesn't seem to really match up either on Winnipeg right now. But all it's going to take is Connor Hellebuck going on a hot streak to shut McDavid and Draisaitl down, and suddenly, you know, it doesn't take much for Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, Kyle Connor, I'll specify, to you know, get a couple of easy goals on Edmonton when they have one of their random defensive lapses. I think ultimately the Oilers take this one in 6 games, going off of just how the teams have been playing, and just Edmonton's going to be hungry. I think they learned their lesson from last season, and now that all these guys have another year of experience, another year where most of the team stayed together, there wasn't a whole lot of turnover from year to year, that I think they're kind of building up that core group, that chemistry that it's going to take to propel them a bit deeper than they have been in the past.
Yeah, I think Edmonton's just, you know, if their offense is churning, I think it's just going to be too much to for Winnipeg to handle. So similar to the Toronto-Montreal series where, you know, just the production that can happen in the, you know, the top six, or for Edmonton, the top three, you know, depending on which line Draisaitl's on. But
yeah. Well, going off of how the last playoffs went, Draisaitl and McDavid got split up, especially against Anaheim, and that made it really, really difficult for the other team to match up because they aren't able to split up their best defensive players to cover two amazing lines like that. And that lets, you know, they focused on shutting McDavid down, but that left Draisaitl with a better matchup, and he put up a ton of points in that series. So it'd be definitely in the Oilers' best interest to split them up and run two, potentially even three lines with offense if you want to throw Nugent Hopkins on his own line for a bit. But I think if they want to go Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl, Yamamoto as a line, that one's got past success, and it also helps them split up the threat a bit so that they aren't able to get shut down as a one-line team.
Yeah, and then if that power play is clicking, it's going to be really hard for Winnipeg to, you know, come back if they just keep taking penalties. Like, if they keep if they like trip up Connor, because it's like whoever's matched up against him, you know, they're going to take penalties just trying to stop Connor McDavid, and that really plays into the hands of the Oilers. Just so
it depends how the rule book is called, because you've got Connor, you've got the McDavid rule book, you've got the playoff rule book, and then are we going to see the Connor McDavid playoff rule book?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to draw calls. It might not be, everything, but just his speed and his ability to just, like, embarrass guys. I think he's just going to, you know, guys are going to be clutching and grabbing and trying to do whatever they can to prevent him from getting around them, and or otherwise he's just going to go down the ice and score. So it's like, I guess you just risk it to get a power play, because at least then you've got a better opportunity of stopping it. But, you know, if it's between that, taking a penalty and letting Connor McDavid get a breakaway, it's like, I think you know what, most defenders are going to do. so, yeah, I just think that the Oilers, just based on their track record of, you know, kind of letting some series get away on them. And like you said, the Chicago series last year, I think that it'll probably go longer than it should, but the Oilers will end up taking it.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.